here to you. I'm going to talk about how to construct a planar algebra, which will give you the higher up subfactor. So first, I should remind you what the higher up subfactor is, tell you what a planar algebra is, I'll define it and give a few examples, and tell you about the particular planar algebra that I'm going to be working with and the special subplanar algebra it contains, which will give you the higher up planar algebra. Okay, so if you recall from Marta's service talk yesterday, the higher up subfactor is the subfactor of the hyperfinite or the AFD 2-1 factor, which has principal graphs and dual principal graphs equal to this pair of graphs here. And it's the smallest exotic subfactor in the sense that it's irreducible. It has index 5 plus root 13 over 2, which is about 4.3. This is the smallest index greater than 4 that can show up for a finite depth subfactor, and this is a theorem of Hargerup's. And it's exotic in the sense that we don't see it coming from somewhere else. These graphs aren't Dinkin diagrams. We don't get this in any sense from groups or quantum groups or other families of subfactors that are known. So the Hargerup subfactor has already been constructed at least two times that I know of. Aceta and Hargerup did it with commuting squares, and Izumi did it using sectors and Q systems. So why try to do this a third time? Right, that's maybe the question you're asking. It could be easier. Neither of these constructions are very easy. Well, I mean, I'll let you be the judge in 20 minutes. But the other hope is that it might generalize differently. So Marta told us yesterday about this generalization here, similar graph, but it sticks out in that direction more. So apparently there's very strong statistical evidence that we should have a subfactor in this case, but it hasn't been constructed. And so I'm hoping that the methods I use here might be able to answer the question for this graph. Okay, so what is a planar algebra? So we start with shaded planar tangles, which are something that lives in the plane, where we've got some input disks and we've got some output disks. There's my blue disks here, and some strings that connect them up. The strings aren't allowed to intersect each other, but they should intersect each of the input or output disks in an even number of points. This even number of points means that we can put a checkerboard shading on this, and we're going to put a star near the boundary of each disk, which is going to tell us how to align things when we have to compose them. So the operation on planar tangles of composition is just to pick the one up and stick it down inside the other one. So right here, this one has 1, 2, 3, 4 boundary points, and so we can pick it up, put it down inside here, making sure the stars line up. Then we join all the strings up and get rid of the blue boundary, and we get this tangle out. Now, shaded planar tangles and the operation of composition form the planar operad, and a planar algebra is just a representation of the planar operad. So we have a family of vector spaces associated to each kind of input disk we can have. So since we have an even number of points, say if we had 6 points on the boundary, that would be an element, and we could put something from V3 in there. One thing is that we have two different kinds of disks with no points on the boundary. They can either be in a shaded region or an unshaded region, so we have a V plus and a V minus for that reason. But, of course, it's not just a family of vector spaces. It's a family of vector spaces that comes with an action by planar tangles. So, for example, let's see. So up here, V2 goes in here. Something from V3 comes out, so this should be a map. Oh, sorry. V2 goes in here, something from V4 comes out, so there are 8 boundary points. So this is a map from V2 to V4. And in this one here, we have 2 V2s, and the output is also something in V2. And so the compatibility condition is that when we stick these together, the map that we get by going V2 to V2 to V2, and then sticking that in here and going to V4, should be the same as the map that we get just by using this tangle on two V2s and getting out of V4. Okay, so the simplest example, everyone's favorite example, is the temporally lead planar algebra. And we don't, we still keep some of the graphical formalism here. So a temporally lead element is going to be a linear combination of pictures, disks that have no input disks, and output disks with two end strings meeting up, and all of the strings have to hit the output disk somewhere. We're not allowed to have closed loops floating around inside. So I've written down the first few up here. The zero ones are one-dimensional. The first one's one-dimensional, two-dimensional, five-dimensional. Okay, so those are the vector spaces. What's the action by tangles? Well, it's pretty easy to see. I didn't put stars on this, but if I remember to put stars here, you would know that you just pick this up, plop it down in here, smooth things out. You end up with this picture, but now this has these closed loops in it, and we said we weren't allowed to have closed loops. So what we do is we just throw them out. But we don't forget they were there. We count them. We remember that they were there by multiplying by delta. So delta squared times just this tangle is the same thing as this. Okay, and if we have a planar algebra where closed loops count for delta, then we have an obvious map from temporally lead into our planar algebra, which is a planar algebra homomorphism. What's more, if delta is more than 2, this map is injective. So in this sense, temporally lead is an initial element, or is the smallest planar algebra you can have. Okay, and now let me tell you a little bit about the structure of planar algebras. So one a particularly nice kind of planar algebra is what we call a subfactor planar algebra. It has properties like there's an involution star on each vector space, which is compatible with the involution on tangles, which you get by picking your tangle up, reflecting it, and setting it back down. Another requirement, and this is a pretty strong requirement, is that the dimension of both of your zero spaces has to be 1. This is really convenient because, for instance, it gives us a trace map. If we take any M box and we just loop off all the strings, then this is a map from Vn to V plus in this case, which is a copy of the complex numbers, so it's a trace. Well, really, so it's a state, but then multiplication in planar algebra just consists of stacking your box on top of each other. And so you can see that if we stacked two boxes here, we could take the one on the bottom, slide it around the outside, put it down on the top again. And so this does have the trace property. Another nice thing we get from this property is that closed loops in a subfactor planar algebra have to count for delta. And another thing we're going to require is spherical invariance, which just means that instead of taking this up to isotropy in the plane, we're taking it up to isotropy in the sphere. So all these pictures here where you kind of pull one string over to the other side give the same thing. Okay, why do we call this a subfactor planar algebra? So the formalism of subfactors is mostly due to von Jones, but there's a theorem of Popov's that if you translate into this language, it says that if P is a subfactor planar algebra, then we can construct a subfactor whose standard invariant is P. Okay. So for instance, if we take the standard invariant of the Hausdorff subfactor, then we're going to get out of subfactor planar algebra. So how big is the planar algebra that you get from the Hausdorff subfactor? We're going to measure how big it is in comparison to temporally lead, because since delta is more than 2, temporally lead injects into this algebra. Well, if we just look at the dimensions of vector spaces, well, the first four are all the same. And then at level 4, we have one new thing here, one more thing than we do here. And after that, it sort of takes off, and you might think that this one kind of gets huge in comparison. But this isn't quite the whole story. So we definitely have one new thing at level 4. And we can look at the annular consequences of this. So an annular consequence is just what you get by sticking your element into some sort of annular. So instead of looking at all planar tangles, we're just saying ones with one input, one output. So I have some examples here. And the representation theory of annular consequences is well understood. And so that tells us, for instance, that this one new thing we got at this level, well, so one new thing at level 4 is going to give us 10 new things at level 5, 66 new things at level 6, and 364 at level 7. And so this is already taking up most of the newness we see appearing over here. Okay? So I'm defining this thing called a critical number, which is basically how much do we need to add in at a particular level in order to get the stuff that we didn't get from temporally lead or from annular consequences of previous stuff. And for this example, the planar algebra from the Hardrath subfactor, our fourth critical number is 1, then the fifth is 0, the sixth is 1, and the seventh is 0. Okay, so this tells us that once we're considering annular consequences, there's not a lot of new stuff being added. Yeah, yeah. In this case, I'm saying that P is the planar algebra of the Hadamard subfactor. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to demonstrate to you a planar algebra that has these properties. So it has critical numbers 4 and 6 equal to 1, 5 and 7 equal to 0, and from this, I'm going to be able to prove that this is the subfactor planar algebra, or that this is a subfactor planar algebra which must generate the Hadamard subfactor. And to find this, we need to look inside the planar algebra of a bipartite graph. Given any bipartite graph, we can construct a planar algebra. Our V minus space is just the linear span of the odd vertices, V plus is the linear span of the even vertices, and Vn is the span of loops of length 2n, which are based at some even vertex. Okay, and this is a fake subfactor planar algebra in some sense. What it doesn't have is this property that these dimensions are equal to 1. But what it does have is an involution star, which you get just by reading a loop backwards. It turns out that it has a trace, and we can force closed loops to count for delta. So we have all of the nice properties we wanted, but we also have the spherical condition. We have all the nice properties we wanted, we just don't have this particular restriction on these dimensions. But this means that if we find a subplanar algebra that does have these things equal to 1, this will share these conditions, and so it will be a subfactor planar algebra. Okay, so if we look at the Hadamard graph, I'm considering these to be my even vertices. We can find an element R in here which has the following properties. Anytime you cap it off, you take two of the strings and you tie them together, you're going to get 0. So it gets killed by any sort of cap. When we rotate it, when we pick up these strings and twist them around just a little bit, we get out minus our element, so it's an eigenvector of eigenvalue minus 1. And finally, when we multiply this element by itself and we cap it off, what we get lives in the copy of temporally lead, which is contained in our zero space. Okay, so now, let's see. So this is, this slide is not supposed to be terribly informative. There's some strange numbers here, and the point is just that we know these numbers. Knowing these numbers is going to allow us to do some linear algebra. So at this point, this is it's a sort of black box calculation, right? I'm not going to tell you where these come from. It's actually more of a white box calculation. My laptop did these for me. But we calculate these moments of multiplying R by itself or taking sort of a twisted multiplication, and we know what their trace is. And this is powerful because it lets us prove a bunch of relations about R. So now I'm not taking traces. Now I'm just considering these actual elements in the planar algebra. So R is our new thing at level 4. That's that fourth critical number we saw. When we multiply R by itself, we don't get anything new. We actually get a temporary leave element back. When we take the prison multiplication of R by itself, we get back something that's in temporary leave and maybe a single copy of R. But the point is that when we have these two R's next to each other, joined by four strings, we can replace it by something in temporary leave and just a single R. Okay? Nothing new at level 5 means that when we take these two ways of joining three strings between the R's, what we get is in the span of annular consequences of level 5 of R and temporary leave. So again, a smaller number of boxes. Okay, and at level 6, we're allowed to have one new thing, right? And this one new thing is this element here. But then these other things that you can construct at level 6 are just in the span of this and temporary leave and our level 6 annular consequences. Sorry? Yes, that's true. So I've abbreviated this, but I can write down what the weighting of everything in here is. Okay, and so these situations are surprisingly powerful. They're going to let us prove infinitely many planar relations. So my theorem here is that the dimension of the zero space of the planar algebra of R is 1, and the dimension of the 1 space is 1. So that means take a bunch of R's, connect them by strings any way you like so that either no strings are coming out or at most 2 strings are coming out. You actually can't have anything that's not in temporally leave by doing this. Okay? Well, how would we prove this? So I'm not going to prove it, but I have some illustrations up here. And the idea is to do it inductively, right? To start with some conglomeration of n R's and to show that you can reduce the number of R's in there. And so you just go through pulling them out, and eventually you get down to having just one or two boxes, and so we know that those have to be temporally leave. So for instance, see a picture like this. This is pretty easy to reduce. If we circle this region, it looks like this thing that was equal to 0. So this is just 0. We could have some more complex things. Like, for instance, in this picture where we only have 2 or 3 strings between any two of these. We can use our relation at level 3 to replace this with something in temporary leave and something that's an annular consequence. So we reduce the number of boxes. We can keep going. And, you know, you could have something complex like this where we only have at most two strings between any of these vertices. And so in this case, we apply the relation we have. We have something in temporary leave, something in annular consequences. That's all good. We've reduced the number of boxes there, but then we have something that has same number of boxes but in a slightly different arrangement. But we changed the way they're connected up, right? These are connected with 4 strings, and so we can use our level 4 relation to reduce the number of boxes there. So that's how we reduce all of these and get down to having our 0 spaces and our 1 spaces being one-dimensional. Okay? And that's actually a very powerful result. So it's a theorem of Hardrup's that if we had an irreducible subfactor whose index is 5 plus root 13 over 2 and it's finite depth, then its principal graph and dual principal graph is one of these two. Well, what do we have? We have a planar algebra, which is a subfactor planar algebra. It's irreducible. That's why we needed that this dimension was equal to 1. And its value delta is 5 plus root 13 over 2, the square root of that. So when we apply the machinery that lets us go from planar algebras back to subfactors, what we get is going to be a subfactor which is finite depth, irreducible, and it has index 5 plus root 13 over 2, so it has to be this subfactor. Okay, and that's all I had planned to say. So actually, I don't know which one I have. So there are still a couple things left to do here. One is figure that out. The other is, I got this by looking at this graph. Well, I mean, we have to get something by looking at this graph. Look at that.
hybrid financing.